This episode of the Citadel Cafe is brought to you by listeners like you. Visit patreon.com/thecitadelcafe to find out how you can become a patron and help make this show possible. This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 366, recorded Tuesday, June 23rd, 2020. My name is Joel Duggan, and the Citadel Cafe is where my friends and I hang out to talk about the geeky stuff that we are into. Joining me this week, Megan Townsend is back. You can find her at Oh Megan Townsend on all the social media that matters, and on /OhMeganTownsend on Twitch. Hello, friend.
Hello, how are you?
Did I get all that right? I think I got all that right.
I think you got all that right.
Yeah.
It sounded right.
It's funny. It's weird when you do this like so often and then you go off script or you miss a word on your notes and you're just like, I've done this 100 times, but all of a sudden I'm doubting myself. It's like when you spell a word and you're pretty sure it's right, but because you're not using a computer, you're like writing it down on a piece of paper. You're like, why does this word look like it's spelt wrong? You know?
You know, I had like a trivial. Full week. Yeah, I had a full week where like the word maybe looked wrong. And I kept trying to spell it in like so many different ways. I was like, M-A-B-E-Y? That's definitely wrong. What is happening? And it was just, no matter what I did, everything just looked incorrect. And I was just like, oh boy. Okay.
It's a good thing we don't work together anymore. Because if you had held that up and said like, Joel, does this look wrong to you? I would have been like, maybe.
Maybe, perhaps. possibly.
I'm sorry, folks. We're here all week. Matinees at 2 on Thursdays and Sundays.
We're hilarious.
We are. I think it's one of the reasons that people tune in. There has to be some reason because there's 366 episodes. We are now well into, people could listen to one episode of the Citadel Cafe every day for a year as of last week. And that kind of blew my mind.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Congratulations.
Right? Thanks.
But also, you keep bringing me back. So, like,
well, yeah, there's that.
Obviously, I'm doing something right.
And actually, it hasn't been months and months since the last time we spoke. You were just on the show earlier this month. So, that's good. It's nice to not have such a long distance between visits on the podcast. But it's actually, we have quite a lot to talk about. It's not like it's going to be a focused show. We're kind of all over the place, but there's just a lot of nerdy things to speak about this week. I'm going to start off with a plug for my other podcast, the Spawn Chunks, which is all about Minecraft, because we are going to have a huge show coming up this Monday, at the very end of the month. Minecraft 1.16, the Nether update, is out today. It's out right now. I just checked my downloader and I could upgrade at this moment to go and play 1.16. And as a matter of fact, I'm going to be streaming some 1.16 single player stuff from a new world later on today on twitch.tv/JoelDuggan. But this is a huge update to the game. The Nether Dimension has been in the game for years, longer than I've ever played the game. And it has got a full overhaul. So, I mean, you've played Minecraft. You've been in the Nether, I think, a few times on the Citadel server where you and I play together. And now the Nether has got biomes. It's got Crimson Forests and Warped Forests and Basalt Deltas. And, I mean, it is a game changer. There's new mobs. There's new structures. There's a ton of new blocks. There's all kinds of new stuff to explore and have fun with in the Nether. So I'm looking forward to that. There's also some stuff in the overworld. We've got chain blocks and target blocks and some new stuff like that. So I'm looking forward to that. It's going to be a great week to play around with that and then report back on Monday on the Spawn Chunks. But it's definitely a big thing in nerddom. Like when a new Minecraft version comes out, the whole internet, especially streaming, usually comes to a grinding halt and everybody starts playing Minecraft again. There's a lot of people that take breaks, you know, and then come back. They don't necessarily have the kind of content creation that I have going on. So there'll be a lot of people coming back. So have you heard much about the Nether update from Minecraft at all?
I haven't. No, this is the first I'm hearing about it with the biomes. That actually sounds really cool.
Yeah. Okay. So this is going to be really interesting. I'm going to be looking forward to talking to you once you kind of get in there and look around because I've been living it. I mean, we've been getting snapshot updates for months. on mm-hmm. the Spawn Chunks. It's basically like our daily news breakdown. It's like we hear about all this kind of stuff before it's coming. So none of this is a real surprise to me. But I'm excited to see it and experiment with it in game. But for someone like you that's have had nothing, no visuals, like not even a hint at what to expect, that's going to be really cool. We're going to have to do some chunk trimming and some backup stuff happening on the Citadel before we're actually able to update. I need to make sure that I can actually play the game and stream it before I update from the Citadel. But for now, we're going to be playing some single player, I think, on my Twitch channel, and it should be really cool. And we're probably going to try to get to the Nether as fast as possible in the single player playthrough, just to kind of explore and look around and see what's what. So
that's cool.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
It should be a lot of fun. Other than that, I haven't been up to a lot this week. So I'm going to prepare everyone. I'm just going to have some recommendations. Like I've been mostly streaming Satisfactory. And any downtime I've had, I've been watching Satisfactory playthroughs on YouTube. I've not watched Netflix. I've not done much. I've listened to some more music. Last week, Brockett and I spoke quite a bit about different music we were listening to. I was into this 70s rock, and he was talking about Gorillaz and The Weeknd. And I've been doubling down on more like Spotify research and trying to set up a free trial, but I set it up on the wrong account because I was logged in with one of my podcast accounts, which sucked. So now I think I might not be able to use the free trial. But anyway, some technical stuff aside. So if anybody out there is using a music service and has some recommendations for me in terms of the best way to utilize it or organize it or whatever, let me know, because I am notoriously not a music guy. I like music. I just don't go out of my way to seek it out and create playlists and do all that kind of stuff. I've just never been. My friends and I generally have the same tastes in music, so I just let them do it and then I don't care. Like, I'm pretty easygoing, as long as it's not like super twangy country or like really, really like heavy death metal or basically any of the extremes. And I'm like, nope, not into it. But any kind of like normal, you know, middle of the road stuff outside of pop music, I'm okay with.
Well, we should have a chat because I love making playlists.
Okay, cool. So the playlists on satellite radio at the gym that I go to is terrible, for example. And it's probably like top 40 stuff. You know, and it's like Maroon 5 and all the stuff that's just overplayed everywhere. And I was like, no, that's the kind of stuff if it's on a playlist in a mall, I don't want to hear it. Like that's not kind of where I want to be. But yeah, so I'm looking forward to exploring more of that, provided I was hoping for the summer to give it a free trial. We'll see how it goes. But I've been enjoying that, making some more bookmarks and, you know, just kind of chilling out. And I found, because of all the things going on in the world, that there's a lot of information coming my way. And then when I need a break to do the dishes, I don't really want to listen to another podcast because it's just more information.
Right.
Even if it's leisure information, like even if it's a gaming show, tech news today, sorry, that's the wrong one. Daily Tech News Show is one of my favorite podcasts. And I found that I actually my brain kind of fuzzes out and tunes out when they start the show and talk about tech. I, however, subscribe to the Good Day Internet portion of the show as a patron. And so I get the extended version, which is just them shooting the shit for the first, you know, 15, 20 minutes before they record the actual podcast. And so I'm enjoying that because it's just them talking about whatever, sandwiches, dogs, like just whatever kind of floats their boat that week. And so that to me has been kind of like what I listen to for podcasting, because it's really kind of just inconsequential fluff and it's easy listening. When I've been doing dishes and stuff, though, after dinner, I've been more like listening to music and just trying to make some favorites and increase that list so that if I do decide to take advantage and subscribe to a service, that I can start to curate things, that I have some favorites at least marked down and have something that I can at least start with, you know, and say like, oh, yeah, you know, AC/DC and Guns N' Roses and like, well, let's put those all in one chunk, you know, and listen to those all together.
Because I like to curate playlists in a really, really specific way. I like playlists to tell a story. So I will try and curate a playlist to have, you know, to start with a certain vibe and take you on a journey. The idea is you're supposed to listen to it all the way through. I add songs in as I think of them, and then I go back in and organize them later. So, you know, there, I definitely feel like there's some services that are better than others for like curating a playlist and organizing it to tell your story. I'm still trying to decide which service I'm settling on as well. But that could probably be something we can talk about together at, you know,
yeah,
at some other time.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? I mean, and Brockett was talking about Tidal. And the only reason that he and his wife are using Tidal is because it's part of their mobile package in the US. Like I can't remember what service he said they were with, or even if he mentioned what service provider they're with, but it's bundled in with their like family cell phone plan is access to Tidal. And he was saying last week that he missed Spotify, but Tidal right now is free. So, well, why would you pay for one when you have access to the other? Right. So
yeah.
That, so that's kind of where, is that,
that's
where
probably not
too.
Available in Canada though, is it?
I don't think so. No. So, and that's, and that's the other thing, that just like all the other streaming services for video that we talk about on the podcast, there's also restrictions regionally as to what is available in Canada for different music services and stuff like that. But, and I'm just so green and I use it so lightly that it doesn't feel worth the subscription without testing it. And it also, it doesn't, I haven't done enough research to figure out like which ones are available in Canada. So like, I don't need the best of the best because I'm not that user. Like I'm not the person that has the record collection, you know, like I have an art, I have an art book collection, not a record collection. So like, it's one of those things where like, I'm not on the cream of the crop list for like the best features of a music service. I just need something. Basically, I want to get past the 6 skips an hour, because there's a couple of times where I've noticed that I've been hearing the same song. It's like, no, I don't want that one. Like, play something else. And I can't, because I'm stuck. I've already skipped a number of things, you know, like 70s rock is great, but that also includes sometimes Rod Stewart, which is not rock. I don't care who you are. That's not, that should not be on that playlist. And when you can't skip it, you're like, well, I'm done listening to that for now. Let's listen to something else. So
oh,
yeah,
man, that's funny.
Switch genres. But yeah, so other than that, what I've been mostly doing is playing Satisfactory. And I thought what I would do this week, rather than talk about it more, because I talked about the gameplay last week quite a bit, but I have some YouTubers that I could recommend. And it's been a long time since I've recommended YouTubers on this particular program, because most of what I watch on YouTube is Minecraft related. So of course, we generally talk about that on the SpawnChunks podcast. But I've got a few folks. I was looking for some female streamers and YouTubers for Satisfactory and could not really find any that were easy to kind of sort out off the top. I'm going to keep looking. And if anybody does know any lady streamers that play Satisfactory, let me know, because I'd like to try and promote, you know, both. Because I find that in these particular genres of games, or even just in YouTube in general, there tends to be just a lot of dudes. And I want to always try to put like a balance forward when I'm looking at it. There's a lot more female Minecraft players out there, which is great. And we, you know, there's, you know, Hermitcraft and a bunch of other people that we can recommend from those channels. But these three guys have been kind of like what I've been gravitating to for the last little while. Kibitz, Z1 Gaming, and Zisto. And I'll kind of give you a rundown. Kibitz is probably my favorite out of all of these guys. He's only got 116K subscribers on YouTube. I would have expected him to have a lot more considering the amount of content that he puts out. He is Canadian, which you can tell from the moment he starts speaking. And it was like, he's either from North Dakota or rural Ontario. I couldn't put my finger on it until he dropped his first A. And I was like, oh yeah. I know where you're from. And there's other things that he says too, the way that he puts sentences together and things like that are just very unabashedly Canadian. He's exclusively a Satisfactory YouTube guy. I've seen a couple of other games here and there, but most of his content for the last year has been Satisfactory. The first thing you will notice is that he puts on a bit of a faux radio voice for his intros and key points in his videos. It's a bit goofy, but he knows it. And as the episode moves along, he'll fade back into a little bit more of a normal commentary. But he sounds like a 50s radio announcer when he says, like, I'm Kibitz. And he's like, oh, geez, do I really want to watch this guy? But the thing is, like, I found him through a tutorial video and I just wanted the information. And when I just want the information, I can kind of stomach the presentation sometimes if I think that it's going to be a good quality video. But like I said, after a little bit, he starts to just fade off into like normal speaking voice. He is still very excited, But it's because he likes the game. It's not because he's faking it. I think his YouTube channel is just aimed at some younger viewers. So he has a little bit more of a presentation. But he does drop into it from time to time. And I think it's just sometimes people's way of coping, of talking to themselves, because these are not streams. These are like sitting by yourself and recording video, you know, in your studio. And he will sometimes drop back into it when something exciting happens. Or if like he gets attacked by a spider or something, he'll squeal. Like it's pretty earnest. But when he gets excited about something, he kind of drops into this like 50s radio announcer / professional wrestler commentator. And so
that's actually really great.
And so like, and something happens, he's like, "Oh, this is going to be spicy, brother." And you're just like, "What?" I think he's basically trying not to swear.
Right.
And so it ends up being pretty entertaining because it's not all the time. It's not nonstop, right? Like he's not trying to put like a child's program together that's trying to maintain the attention span of a 3-year-old. Like he's really doing pretty well with what he's doing. And what comes across from him so much is that he really, really likes the game. Like you can absolutely tell that he is just loving every minute of this, and he will put in the work to make things as efficient as possible, but he will also say, but this way is more fun. And then just does something with like jump pads and loop-de-loops and like just stupid stuff because it's more interesting and more fun to do that because he had that idea. And it'll work that way. And it'll either be more time or less efficient, but I don't care because it means that we can jump off this building. So we're going to do that. and I kind of like that fly by the seat of your pants. Like I'm playing this however the heck I want sort of situation. But I'll have a link to his YouTube channel and a link to his Twitch stream, who I've been watching him for a week. I'm surprised I haven't thought to just look when he streams. And it looks like Fridays and Wednesdays, I think. But anyway, I'll check that out and have that up there.
So I have some questions about Satisfactory, though.
Yeah, sure.
I've never played it.
Yep.
And I know that you mentioned it to me to mention to Colin, and Colin's never played it, and he's wondering, is it a first-person game?
So it's first-person. It is a factory building, resource gathering, and management game. So if he's played Factorio at all, it's very similar. But what I didn't like about Factorio is that it's top-down. It's really old school pixel graphics.
Yes. Okay. So he was confusing it with Factorio.
Right.
So I think he has played Factorio because he's like, is it a bird's eye view or is it a first person?
Yeah.
So he couldn't figure it out.
And then Factorio also has these bugs that attack you constantly. So it's kind of like StarCraft in a way that you have to constantly defend your factory and your factory will be destroyed by the bugs. While there are enemies, they're just positioned in key points around the map that kind of gate you from certain things. Like say you find a copper node and you need to mine copper to make copper wire, there might be one of these weird dog creatures that happens to live there that you have to kill once in order to get access to that node. But that's it. And after that, they don't come attack your factory. If you're in your factory, you can just sit there. You don't have to worry about anything. You're going to die from falling off of something before something's going to come attack you. If you venture off into the world, though, I will say that because of gravity, cliffs, other animals, there's a lot of aggressive stuff out there and you don't have a lot of like armor. It's not a combat game. So when you're out there, it's not easy to survive. They give you some tools, but like you don't have like infinite health points. It's not like Minecraft where end game you just feel like a tank and you can handle anything. It feels very much like day one Minecraft where like skeletons and zombies are a problem, right? And so these fire breathing, you know, cow things and fireflies the size of footballs that sting you, like stuff like that is a concern when you're out adventuring in the world. And you generally only have to do that when you need to find more resources. But really for the first several hours, you're in one spot next to an iron node, a copper node and a limestone node. And you're just kind of trying to figure out how to play the game. So it's really a peaceful playthrough. Like you only get combat when you ask for it. It doesn't seek you out. So that's really cool about it. But yeah, it's first person and it's like modern graphics. It's not pixelated. It's all 3D, lots of really cool lighting effects. And you can see all the things moving along. So when you put items on a conveyor belt, it gets filled up and it's just constantly going. And so after a while, you end up with this giant spaghetti factory of really cool stuff flying everywhere.
That's really cool. That sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, and it's such a chill game. Like it's something that's a lean back experience, but also there's just always something to do. Like right after you hook up a thing and it's working, then the next thing you have to do is like, oh, well, now I have this other objective. I need to make this other thing. And that means when you realize what you need to automate item A, you need to also automate item B, C, and D, which are made into item A. And so then you have to like backtrack and do all this stuff. And there's all this load balancing. And the reason why I recommended it for Colin is because there's a lot of like number crunching. Like there's a lot of like, you've got a... In a good way, like, you know, well, you're harvesting 120 iron per minute, and then you have iron rods that need 30 per minute, and, you know, iron plates that need 20 per minute, and you've got to kind of sort out how to get them all into the right channels. And what ends up, the way that it forces you to do that is by splitting conveyor belts and remerging them. And so it ends up looking very busy and very cool very quickly in the early game, because you just have to do simple fractions of like dividing 120 down into four belts of 30 and setting that into four constructors. And then you've got four, you know, belts of ore coming out. So your stuff gets very busy and very cool looking very quickly. And it's a terrible pun and it's overused, but it's very satisfying, which is why it's called Satisfactory. Right. And so it really kind of scratches that itch of like, I need to control something. Like I need to just go into this game and I just need to make something. I need to control it. And I was speaking about it on the Render Distance, the extended version of the Spawn Chunks podcast for our patrons. And I think one of the reasons I like it so much right now compared to Minecraft, where I am still enjoying Minecraft and building big things, but you can make big things in Satisfactory in minutes. That's cool. To block by block by block in Minecraft, where a skyscraper will take me a week to put together in Minecraft of streaming gameplay. Whereas in Satisfactory, like if you have the materials handy, you can basically build like a 440 floor building in like a couple minutes. It really does make you feel accomplished and powerful. You know, like you're there to, you know, harvest the planet and make it, you know, utilize it for your own kind of needs. And you can get that sense from watching any of these YouTubers that I'm going to recommend as well. Z1 Gaming is the first YouTuber that I found that was doing Satisfactory. Also lower on the subscriber count than I thought. He's at 150K. I thought these people would be well into the 500K given their presentations, because their videos are very well put together. Z1 Gaming does a variety of survival building games, so like Satisfactory, Astroneer. There's a new one called Hard Space Shipbreaker that just came out. And then No Man's Sky is something that he's played a lot of as well.
Yes.
Z1 Gaming, he moves and talks like a mile a minute when he's playing Satisfactory, because he's the kind of person that I think has done several playthroughs. So Z1 Gaming might not be your best watch for learning how to play Satisfactory, because he kind of glazes over things quite quickly, especially early game. Right. And he is a bit hard to follow. I get like this too when I play the game. I'm not as excited as Z1 Gaming. I'm not as all over the place, but you can get distracted by like, I came in this room to get screws, and then when you're there, you realize, oh, wow, this machine's not working. And that leads into a 45-minute, you know, troubleshooting thing of getting that backup going. And then you go back to where you started, and you realize, crap, I still need screws. You have to go back and get them. And so it can be kind of like a, you know, task list of like six things, and you only ever get one or two done. But Z1 Gaming tends to be all over the map. He can be kind of hard to follow. But again, he makes up for it because you can tell that he is just thoroughly enjoying the game. Doesn't put on any kind of crazy voice. I think he is just that excited all the time. And he's fun. I've watched his streams. His streams are a little bit more chill than his videos. So again, he streams on Twitch, and he's really fun to watch as well. Now, the last one I want to recommend is actually someone that has a bit more fame as a Minecraft player. Zisto, Z-I-S-T-E-A-U. Has 350K subscribers, which is what I would probably expect when I went to go to his channel. He's best known for Minecraft play on the Minecraft server, which is no longer going anymore, I don't think. But most people that are Minecraft players would probably know him from the Minecraft server. You don't really get to see him build much in Satisfactory. He builds things, but he builds it mostly off camera. And then he comes back and gives you a tour and kind of explains things. And he does that very, very well. He's like, okay, this is our node and it does X. And then we have these belts and these splitters and here's where it goes and this is why. And I'm doing this for future proofing or whatever. And he explains it, and he explains it in a way that's not too spoilery. So like if you're new to the game, there's a couple of episodes where I was watching him where he was starting to get ahead of me. And I was really tentative to keep watching him because I'm like, well, I don't want to spoil this. I kind of want to experiment with this in the game myself. And so sometimes it's easy to pause the video. And other times when I just didn't bother, I was like, well, this isn't a huge spoiler. I'll just watch it. He'll say stuff like, well, this will be important later. And then just doesn't say anything else. And you're like, okay, cool.
Oh,
so like
that's nice.
He's not going to go off in this tangent that he can't visually give you reference for. Because he can't build the building. He knows it's coming because he's done a playthrough before. But he'll stop and be like, well, we'll get to that later. I don't want to overwhelm you sort of idea. And so that's really cool. But what he builds are really cool looking factories. And I would imagine the reason he does it in a cutaway is because it probably takes ages of experimentation. Because it's all prefab, like walls and foundations and things, to try to get them to be fitting together in an interesting way. Like anybody can make a box in Satisfactory and have it look good. That's what I've been doing. I've been building boxes. But he does like sloped stuff with like funny roofs and different shapes. And he kind of made his factory look like a spaceship. And like, so he's very creative in that way. And it must take ages to do that, which is why I think he does it between cuts. And then he just comes back and gives you a tour. So it's informational, but it's not quite as like from the hip as, say, Kibitz. I find Kibitz is probably the top of my list in this recommendation list because he's fun, he's entertaining, he's upbeat. Things that happen in the game that are unplanned, he reacts very earnestly to them, and I think he's more fun to watch once you get past the Canadian wrestler announcement voice. then you're good to go. But yeah, those are the three recommendations. The only thing I'll warn people about Xisto, and I don't know whether he does it on purpose or whether it's just like a verbal thing, like a tick that he does. He very often sounds like a cross between Christopher Walken and William Shatner, and it grates on me after a while.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm trying to remember. Like, he says words funny. But he says them funny on purpose, but then he'll continue to do it. And it's just like, it starts to be just like, if you don't have anything interesting to say, just move on, you know?
So does it just get distracting?
It gets distracting because there's no reason, because it's not an exciting moment. Like if you're calling something like I can't remember what I called the spiders in the game when the first time I saw them, I think I called them death maggots because they're not spiders. They've only got six legs, but they're the size of a dog. And they're fast and creepy and just, it's like, why are there always spiders in video games? But now I know why. But anyway, I think I called them death maggots on stream. And that was just funny because I don't know I don't know what else to call them. Right. But then he would get on some tangent about the way that you pronounce a word. And then so it's not exciting. The death maggot attack was exciting, and so it got its own special kind of like moment. But like he'll just make a moment out of like a belt, you know, like or a node, and he's like, "This is not interesting. I'm not sure why you're making this sound like it's cool." And so again, I don't want to criticize him too much because I mean he obviously is a very successful YouTuber and he does good content. But I do find that for whatever reason, sometimes when he gets into like the Christopher Walken, William Shatner voice, I kind of go, oh God, why are you doing that? There's no reason for that. Just be a normal human. It's fine. So yeah, just be warned that there might be some cheese grating happening if you watch Xisto. But that's it. That's all I've been really doing is just, you know, streaming Satisfactory and playing Satisfactory and recommending Satisfactory to friends. It's kind of been all encompassing for the last week or so.
I've been not doing a lot. Well, I've been doing a lot of writing. But in terms of like, you know, content absorption, I haven't really been doing much of it. But mostly I've been dealing or like trying to consume a lot of content for Pride Month. June is Queer Pride Month. And so I went kind of down a rabbit hole on Netflix and I found this cute little movie called The Half of It. It's kind of like a coming of age comedy drama that's quirky and really cute. It's not like it's not amazing. Like I really liked it. I wouldn't say it blew my mind in any way. It kind of hits you in like a feel good spot. It's kind of, you know, it's something light and fluffy to watch when things feel really, really crap. But it's like it's about this girl named Ellie, and she lives with her widower father, and she's like the one Asian kid in the whole town of Squamish, which is like this tiny little rural, you know, seaside town. And she's known for like she makes like side income by writing papers for her fellow students. She's brilliant. She writes really good essays. And, you know, so she basically is like, you know what, if it's not an A, you don't have to pay, is like one of her slogans. So it's like, she writes like, you know, she's really organized, and she makes sure she writes everyone's names on them and hands them out to people. And like one of her, like her English teacher knows about it and even asks her at one point in the movie. She's just like, so like, if you just stop doing this thing. And she was like, no. But the whole premise of the story is that because she has this writing, quote unquote, business, this illicit business, she's approached by a football player named Paul, who's like just really earnest and like really, really like heart of gold, but just really not literate in the sense of like he can't figure out how to get his words across well, and he wants to write a love letter to this girl named Aster that he's been in love with for years. Like, he's head over heels for Aster. And Aster is, like, you know, peak popular girl.
Right.
But, you know, everyone kind of, you know, she kind of lives a sort of, like vapid life of just, you know, she has a, you know, very attractive rich boyfriend who's, like, you know, got, you know, dimples and, you know, is like super talented and everything, but he's like the most shallow person ever.
It's right,
like, there's no essence, there's no substance to him at all. He's just all look. And her, you know, she's the daughter of a pastor, and, you know, all this stuff. So she's, you know, got like peak life in a tiny little town, but she's, you know, actually very brilliant, and you know, is a very deep thinker, and like reads really, you know, gut-wrenching stories, and, you know, likes to, you know, imagine something more for herself, but is kind of like pigeonholed into this, like, you know, housewife, small town housewife sort of,
right,
you know, future, essentially. But Paul has been in love with Aster for years, and so he hires Ellie to write him a love letter to give to Aster, without knowing that Ellie has also been in love with Aster for years. So it's kind of like this cute little love triangle that kind of develops this really unique friendship between Ellie and Paul. Like, even though that she's really in love with Aster, she wants to keep helping Paul to kind of get somewhere, and she's like, she sees it as like a personal goal for herself,
right?
But she continues to text Aster, like, you know, under the guise of like helping Paul get with her, but they end up kind of forming this weird connection that, like, it's really sweet. It's a really sweet story. It's kind of like, you know, figuring out yourself. Like, Aster kind of goes through her whole journey of just like, who am I, what am I doing with my life,
right,
what I want to do. She's an artist, and she decides, she's like, I'm gonna go to art school, when like before her parents wanted her to, you know, go to law school, but actually not practice law and just be a housewife, you know. So it's cute. It's, there's not a lot of substance to it, but it's a nice feel-good story. And I watched it on a slow day, and, you know, it was nice. It's a nice little cute story. And then I also started replaying through the Mass Effect series with my boyfriend Colin. So we've been taking turns. Every time we see each other, we'll just, you know, jump back into the game. So we finished the first one not long ago, and now we're into number two. And I forgot how much I actually really like the series. There's a lot of problems with it, in terms of, you know, it's an older game, like, it's, yeah, an older title. It came out, you know, 2007, I think, was the first one, and the last one came out 2015. So it's definitely, you know, a number of years old, and but I forgot how good the music was, and how,
yeah,
despite, you know, how clunky it can be, it's also still very engaging. And I think what's really engaging about it is the world building of it. Like, the story itself is, you know, it's a hero story. You're playing Commander Shepard, who's meant to be a hero. which is great. But it's kind of what you make of it. Like, it's you can kind of foster, you know, whatever relationships you want to foster, you know, with, you know, certain characters based on choices that you make. But like the depth of the characters are really, most characters, not all of them, unfortunately, but most characters are very, very well written. And what's really interesting is that all the alien characters are the ones that are the most human. They're the ones that are the most, like, well-rounded and engaging, and all the human characters are boring as hell. Mm-hmm. So boring. So empty. And it kind of sucks. I forgot how good the music was and how nice the atmosphere is and, like, the world building is. It's kind of, you know, I'm glad to reapproach it again. There's not really much else I can say about it, yeah. But I am glad to reapproach it again.
What's the name of the big station that you live on or visit?
Well, so you're on a ship, yeah. But like the big, like, central, like, you know, galactic hub is called the Citadel.
The Citadel, right.
It's called the Citadel.
Can't believe I couldn't remember that. I know. it's been a long time, but I remember being on that going like, wow, okay, this game is huge. Now, is that in the first one or the second one?
It's in all of them. You first go to the Citadel in the first one, and you go to certain areas of it, and then in the second one, you go to different areas of it, so you're seeing more of the Citadel. And the second one, you're on the other side of a devastating attack that happened to the Citadel, so there's like a rogue agent who... you know, partnered with, you know, this ancient race of, you know, conquerors called the Reapers, and basically tried to destroy the Citadel in order to open up a gateway for all the other Reapers to come through. You had, like, one of them who was, like, basically the catalyst, and then trying to open up deep space so everyone else could come through. And so number two is you've kind of been... At the beginning of number two, Commander Shepard is... you know, your ship is being attacked by something. You don't know what it is at the time. And essentially, you're launched into space. After managing to save all your crew, you're launched into space and are basically, you know, your spacesuit gets punctured. And you essentially suffocate out in space. So this other, or like, you know, you're basically left for dead. The military that you've worked for years is basically like, well, she dead, or they dead, depending, because you can choose what gender you play. And then another rogue organization called Cerberus essentially finds your bits and rebuilds you. Because future science. Sci-fi science. And I like the second one a lot. There's more character development, I find, like character relationship development that I find happens. It's just structured really well. Again, it's not perfect, but the world building and the lore of the game is fascinating. Like, if you sit and read the lore on, like, the history of, like, you know, when, like, humans first get in contact. Yeah, there's a codex, and, like, you read the codex of, like, all of the alien races and, like, their different hierarchies, and it is fascinating. It is, like, I wish there was more of a game around that. I wish there was more of a game around, like, the lore of Mass Effect that's not just you inserting yourself into it, I guess, or, like, or if something that's, like, Dragon Age adjacent, where you can choose which race you play as, like, have, like, an adjacent story to the Mass Effect, you know, the main Mass Effect story, and play as, like, a different race and kind of hear about everything that's going on in the main games, but have your own adventure on the side.
Yeah.
I think that would be super cool.
I remember really liking, like, the world. Like, really liking
the world. Oh, the world is great. It's so good. And there's some really funny, subtle jokes that I totally forgot about. But in number two, like, in number one, you have to, like, if you ever want to go to a planet, you have to essentially... You scan every planet, and then if there's something on there, you're launched onto the planet in this really terrible vehicle, Land Rover, called the Mako, which sucks.
I remember that.
Oh, it's so bad. It's so bad. It just drives like a
boat.
It's stupid. It's stupid.
Yeah.
It's so bad to drive. And so you have to, like, drive around this entire planet to find stuff. So it takes forever. And then they introduced a probing mechanism where you, like, scan a planet and you find, like, you know, on a scanner, minerals and things and anomalies and stuff like that. And if there is, like, an anomaly, you can then go on to the planet and, you know, explore then. But one of the things you can do is you can go back to the Earth solar system and launch a probe at Uranus. And it's really funny because, like, your EI immediately, as soon as you do it, she's just like, really? Really? You want it? Okay. And then you do it again, and she's like, probing Uranus. It's just little subtle things like that are very good. Yeah. But, like, right, like the first time you're like, haha, I'm going to do this. And immediately they're just like, really? Really, Commander? Okay.
Like,
it's there's, yeah, it's good.
Yeah, smartass. We thought of that too.
Yeah, it's a very funny thing. Yeah. I wasn't gonna do it, and then someone's like, no, you have to go do it, and I was like, oh, they thought of everything.
Yeah, that's something I really like about Satisfactory is that if you or Colin have played Portal and are familiar,
oh, yes,
and enjoy that sense of humor, Ada, the administrative digital assistant in Satisfactory, has that sense of humor. Like that is your guide to the Satisfactory universe, and in order to get started, it's just like, you know,
okay,
please don't fall off any cliffs, because we at Fixit Corporation would hate for any damage to happen to our equipment, basically the thing that you're holding. No regard for you. It's just like, don't drop yeah. that expensive scanner that we just gave you. So it's stuff like that is really well done. And there's,
that's actually really funny.
Yeah. And there's something about, like, you know, they introduced like multiplayer, which is cool about Satisfactory. And then they also, talk about like email or communication or something like that. And it's like, you know, Fixit Corporation, something like, would like to encourage everyone to stay in touch professionally and stuff. And then while it's lonely out here, you know, facility mingling is discouraged, but we are always watching, or something along those lines. Like and every kind of upgrade you get will have some sort of little note in the tutorial about like that sense of humor. I quite enjoy that.
I like that a lot. Yeah. It's actually really good.
Yeah. Well, because you're there just because there's no purpose to all this factoring stuff that you're doing. You're sending the stuff right into the ether to do whatever. And it's like, send it to the space elevator. Where does it go? Doesn't matter. We just want more stuff, you know? So it has that kind of like, cool. It's one of those things where like the end goal or the thing that you're building all of this for is just this giant soulless corporation, but they are hyper aware of it.
They're not you know, under the guise of like, oh, we're so good.
No,
we're bettering society.
No, exactly. It's like, you know, it's
funny.
Like how to deal with like polluting alien planets. It's just like, we'll just pollute more. Just like that kind of a thing. It's really funny. I liked Mass Effect quite a lot. I remember not being super fond about the ending. I think that was kind of a general, I think, feeling. Did they not do a fourth one? I thought there was a fourth game.
No, they did Andromeda, which is sort of like a spinoff.
Oh.
And that kind of has its own issue. So it's supposed to happen between...
Oh, I hate prequels.
Between 2 and 3. It's not really a prequel. It's like, it's kind of happening adjacent to it. But essentially, there was a thing called the Pathfinder Project where... Because they knew that the, you know, galaxy was going to be more or less decimated by the Reapers, they were like, well, let's get a couple of people together and let's go to a different galaxy and see if we can't repopulate there. So it's basically putting all of this, you know, a bunch of Krogan and Turian and Asari and, you know, humans and stuff like on a ship and sending them to Andromeda. So you're basically in cryo sleep for a little while. And I've never played it. But Colin has, and he was saying that one of the major problems with it was that deeply rooted in the lore of Mass Effect is there's a lot of interspecies tension, in terms of like how one species has treated another. Like Krogan are typically kind of bottom of the totem pole because they were sort of forced into evolution in kind of not a great way. There's another race called the Salarians that, essentially, you know, raised them up, gave them guns, and they're still basically like, you know, in like a Neanderthal state. So they're basically forced into evolving too soon. Like they weren't ready,
mm-hmm.
but Salarians are like a weaker race. So they needed protection from like the Turian armies that were invading their planets. And, you know, there's just been a lot of like interspecies conflict. So there's a lot of, war and because the Krogans, you know, repopulate really fast, they launched a genetic mutation called the genophage that basically wiped them, you know, prevented them from, you know, having too many children, like one in a thousand.
Right.
Like, you know, sorry, like one out of a thousand infants are not stillbirths in the Krogan world. And that's like, that's a huge, you know, plot point in, you know, for Rex, which is one of your squad members. Mm-hmm. And it even becomes a plot point in number two because you get a cloned Krogan because you can't organically have Krogan. They all just die. But Krogan also live for a really long time, so like there's still a lot of them around, but they're all kind of like affected by this genetic mutation that, you know, most of them do not live, you know, past, you know, infancy, despite living a long time. But all of those, you know, and the Turians had a hand in that, and the Salarians had a hand in that, and the Asari are kind of, you know, uppity about a lot of stuff. And so there's all this interspecies tension that you as Commander Shepard are dealing with throughout the main trilogy, but Pathfinder or Andromeda, sorry, kind of forgets that. Right. So like all of a sudden everyone's just all buddy buddy fine with everything. Mm. Even though in the midst of all this conflict, where that conflict still would have been, these people are taken from, you know, the Milky Way galaxy and pushed into Andromeda, that tension would still stay with them. It wouldn't just suddenly disappear because they're in a different galaxy all of a sudden. Like, there'd still be some hostility there.
Yeah.
So just like the through line of how the story goes, again, I'm speaking as someone who's never played it, so it could actually be really great, but from what I've heard of it, it's not super wonderful. So, you know, some people love it. Some people liked being able to see new aliens and new races and things. It felt really similar from what I heard to Dragon Age Inquisition, where like they tried to make the romance options just like too quirky.
Right.
So like no one felt really stable. And it's the only other game that featured a female Turian, which is a really rare thing. You don't often see in the games at all. They think the one time you see one is in a DLC pack for number three.
I'm trying to remember. It's a good DLC pack. Yeah, I'm trying to remember who I was romantic with in Mass Effect.
Oh. The most common options are Ashley and Liara in the first one. The second one, you have Miranda, Jack, and Tally.
I think it was Tally.
Tally's the best. Tally's great.
Because I knew, like, I tend to, like, see that kind of stuff coming. It's like, well, I don't want to do the obvious choice.
Yeah.
Which I think is Miranda. Is she the human?
Well, yeah, Miranda is the human in number two. The obvious choice, what's meant to be, like, the quote-unquote canon choice, apparently, is Liara.
She's the blue one, right?
She's an Asari. She literally just throws herself at you.
Yeah.
You say one nice thing to her and she's like, okay,
all right,
we're in a relationship now. But yeah, Miranda is kind of like an obvious choice in number two. I romanced Garrus cause I thought that was he's just a brilliantly written character anyway.
Mm-hmm.
He is like, again, the non-humans are the most well-written human-like characters of the whole series,
because
like Garrus and Tally have like their conflict and their personalities and their concerns feel so much more important,
mm-hmm,
than everyone else's. Like Miranda's whole problem is just like, oh, I'm genetically perfect and it sucks. That's it. There's not a lot of substance to it. That's essentially what it is. That's it. That's,
yeah.
She's like, I was built in a lab and I'm supposed to be perfect and I'm woe is me about it.
Yeah.
It's, you know, anyway, like it's, I like it. I like it a lot. There's more romance options in number
three
as well. Yeah. And you can also rekindle relationships. And it was the first time that they introduced any, male romance options for a male Shepard.
Right.
Which I remember my friend,
not the mechanic. It's one of your other human dudes, right? There's another.
Yeah, he's a mechanic. Because Steve Cortez, yeah, is his name. And then you also they bring back Caden as an option if you kept Caden alive in number
that's
one.
Who it was? Caden. Yeah.
So Caden was kind of like a wild card. I remember.
I don't think Caden survived my playthrough. I think that he. Yeah. I think that he died.
This time around when Colin and I have played, we've let Caden go and kept Ashley. But to like, you know, I guess strategically, I typically keep Kaden because he's a higher rank than Ashley is.
Right.
And a little stronger. You know, especially what depending on what class you play as a shepherd.
What
Ashley is just she's a gunner. Yeah. She doesn't really have any special abilities, and Kaden is a biotic, so he has more abilities at his disposal.
What build did you choose for your character? Like, what's your shepherd playing like?
We've changed it from game to game. So the first one we were an infiltrator, with a war hero spacer backstory. And the spacer backstory is actually really interesting because your mom's still alive. And if you hear little stories about your mom throughout the story, like if you listen to any conversations or like any news events that are happening, you can, like, your mom is mentioned. Oh. Her name's Hannah Shepherd, and she's talked about, and you can actually call her in Number 3. You can have a conversation with your mom in Mass Effect 3.
Cool.
Which feels weird that you can't call her in Number 2 because you're essentially back from the dead, and it's just like, hi mom, I'm alive, just so you know. That's a thing that they don't bring up. But anyway, again, there's problems with it. It's very good, but there's problems with it. So we did that, but then we changed our class from infiltrator to vanguard for Number 2 because we figured that Cerberus would be the type to bring back Shepherd exactly as they were with some amenities. Let's give them biotic powers. So we did that. Colin's not, I love Vanguard. Vanguard is my favorite class because I am risky and I love the biotic charge where you can just charge at someone, knock them out, and then just punch a bunch of other people in the face. It's very risky because you're basically putting yourself in like line of fire and in the fray. But I like that play style. I'm kind of like, dive in, you know, head first, just go for it. Where Colin is a bit more of a strategic player. So there's been elements about it that he likes. But it's a very specific move that has to be used at certain times.
You'd like Minecraft really like Dungeons. If you like the dive in.
Oh, we actually tried that. We played Minecraft Dungeons like when we kind of got tired of Mass Effect, we slipped over to Minecraft Dungeons and we had a great time.
Oh,
I loved
cool.
it.
Cool. I didn't know you had access to it. That's awesome.
It's more so like we just did split screen on Colin's Xbox.
Oh, nice. Okay, cool.
So, but I might try and give it a try at my own time.
Yeah, no, it's I'm glad that you liked it, but it's fun. It's just a lot of bashy cartoon. Like I love when you kill like the first few levels when you punch a zombie and they spin around, like they get hit so hard that they do like a pirouette before they fall over, like that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It's just super satisfying because you deal with them so often in Minecraft. You're like, ha ha, now I'm the powerful one, you know.
I think satisfying is the word of today's
podcast.
It
is. Yeah. It is. When I did my Mass Effect playthrough, I don't remember much of that because it was many years ago. I think I played Mass Effect 3 when it came out. So, or Mass Effect 3.
That would have been 2015.
Yeah. So Mass Effect 3 came out and I had never played them. And my partner at the time was like, what? You've never played these. And so I went back and I played through 1 and 2 and then played 3. And she watched me play 3 kind of like in the same way that people watch YouTube playthroughs of things. And what she commented on, because what I had done was I didn't take any biotic powers. I was military straight through. Huh. Because I didn't know anything about the
that
franchise.
That scans though.
What's that?
That feels like you though.
Oh really?
That
okay.
feels like a build that you would do.
I don't, well, I like magic and stuff like that. But for whatever reason, because I didn't know the world, I didn't know what to expect. That's kind of where I just kind of gravitated. And I actually took the time because I thought it was so neat in a game at that time that I'd not played one before. I made Shepard look as much like me as I could. And I did a decent job, given the controls that you had at that time, right? And of course, and it changed every game. Every game came out, it got better and you had more control. And so I tweaked a little bit to make it kind of like me. I thought it was kind of fun. But in doing so, by the time I got to the last levels of, or the harder levels of the third game, not to mention that I'm a completionist. So I was doing all the side missions before going down the main road. So I had done all the things and accumulated all the money and gotten all the points and got all the gear. So basically, I was going into these last story missions with like full, I can't remember what Geth sniper rifle I had, but it was a beast. And these things were...
I love that sniper rifle so much.
These things were coming out of the corners of... Oh, we're going to get you. And I don't remember whether they were Geth or whether they were... What are the other things that come at you with like the weird heads?
Husks.
Husks.
Husks. Yeah.
Husks. Anyway, I was one-shotting these things and putting a smoking hole through their chest. And at the time, my partner was just like, what are you doing? How are you doing this? It's like, well, I didn't rush through. I have all the things. Yeah. But it was a really satisfying kind of feeling to the end of that game. Because you do sort of feel, because of how good the story is, because of how good the voice acting is, and because of the way that they kind of drop you into those combat situations with Garrus, you know, over your shoulder and stuff like that. Garrus, I know romantic stuff there for me, but he was my boy. Like, he was my right hand dude. And
yeah,
we'd go in there and just own face. And then you'd have the banter back and forth. And all. It felt like you're in an action movie. And I really enjoyed that part of Mass Effect.
Yeah, I missed that. I missed that story. Because I don't mind shooters. Like, I like them. I don't typically do arena shooters. Like, you know, Valorant is a new one that's out, and Overwatch and things like that. I don't typically play those, not for lack of want, but also just I'm not skilled enough at them.
Yeah, like, and they can be kind of toxic too. Like, it's not a great environment. They can be. Yeah.
No. So I like the story-based shooters. So, you know, Colin and I were playing through Gears of War. The Gears of War series. So we started Gears 5. We haven't finished Gears 5 yet. I have to also haven't been streaming for a while, just for a lot of reasons. But, you know, there's some mechanical issues that we're not really thrilled about with Gears 5 in terms of, like, controls. I don't know what happened, but the story, like, we had a great time with 4. 4 was amazing. I had a blast with it. So, you know, like, that story-based shooter, I'm very into. I really enjoy a lot. And it's nice going back to Mass Effect and seeing that again, because I don't think a lot of those exist. Like, you know, I don't, you know, Call of Duty typically does have a story mode, but they put all their stock into the arena mode.
Yeah.
That's what it's known for. It's known for the arena stuff. So to the fact that, you know, to come back to a story mode shooter game has been really great. I don't know. I've been having a really great time with it. And also, like, you know, playing with someone else. Because Colin wouldn't make the same choices that I would make. So, like, whenever we trade off, we're getting a really rounded Shepard, because I'm not doing everything the same as he is. Like, there's times when he's taking a really renegade approach to stuff when I'm doing very Paragon, or there's some things I'm like, I want to be renegade for this. He's like, I wouldn't have done that, but okay. But that's fine. Like, it's creating a rounded Shepard. We're also trying to be strategic about it, because the more points you have in one, you know, renegade or Paragon in another, it helps with dialogue options in future parts of the game, and that will also help depend on if in your characters make it out alive. I know there's one altercation that Jack and Miranda are having with each other, and if you don't have the proper number of points to either, you know, tell them off or, like, appease both of them, you have to pick, and whichever one you pick whichever one you don't pick is going to end up dying during your final mission. And that's a thing that I struggled with for a long time. I was like, no, because I didn't play the first one initially. When I first started playing Mass Effect, I jumped right into number 2.
Oh, I see.
So I didn't actually play number 1 until afterwards. And I'm glad I played it. I actually like number 1 a lot. Mm. The guns suck. I don't like how your guns overheat.
No, I remember,
prefer, like, the clips.
Yeah, I remember there was a big gameplay shift from 1 to 2. And I remember struggling with 1. And just being told, just wait, it gets better. Because it's an older game, and they learned a lot. Yeah. And so they iterate and they make the controls better. It's very similar, actually, to the difference between Batman Arkham Asylum and Arkham City. And Arkham City, I found it hard to get used to. But after just an hour of the new controls and the way that things worked in Arkham City, you go, oh, this is better. Like, this is much, much better than the old system. And I think that's the closest thing I have to a story shooter in recent years. I guess Borderlands 2. I never played Borderlands 3, but Borderlands 2 was in there. But I really liked that kind of, like, rush-in combat thing that you can do in Assassin's Creed. Because the way that game works is that you can block people attacking you from behind. And so you can run in and take on 5 dudes and still feel pretty badass. But there's not a lot of... I mean, there's guns and Black Flag, but it's muskets. Like, it's not like you have a machine gun.
I remember hearing this really interesting story about Assassin's Creed, where they were in Florence, and they actually used very accurate scans of the city to make that game. Like, you're running around Florence, and they were trying to get to this this kid was telling a story of how he was on a tour group in Florence, or yeah, I think it was Florence, and they were trying to get to this specific church, and their tour guide got lost, and he looked around, he was like, wait, I know where we are, and he led them through the city, like, all these back alleyways, because he played Assassin's Creed, and knew where to go because of Assassin's Creed, and I'm like, that's amazing.
They do some really cool historical stuff. There is a version of Assassin's Creed Origins that is an educational version. Because of the amount of time they put into planning ancient Egypt, schools can actually use it as like a virtual tour.
That's really cool.
Isn't that nuts? I mean, I don't know all the details because I heard that on a podcast years ago about the game when it came out. But yeah, like the amount of detail that they put into the Assassin's Creed games are really, really cool. I really quite enjoy them. I like Minecraft. I play a lot of Minecraft. I get a lot of fulfillment out of the creativity that happens in Minecraft. But lately I've been...
Were you trying not to say satisfaction,
yes,
were you?
Yes, I was. But I try and... I'm noticing the draw to just get me pulled out into other games. I really miss like the fancy graphics of like, you know, Batman Arkham City and like being able to do that kind of stuff. And even Mass Effect back, you know, Mass Effect 3 was really pretty, I thought, at the time.
Beautiful back in the day. And then, you know, speaking of beautiful games, The Last of Us Part 2 has been...
Right.
I mean, The Last of Us Part 1 still looks amazing. I went back and I started playing some of it, but I started watching some playthroughs of Part 2, and it is gorgeous. It is so beautiful. The rendering is amazing. It's scary as hell. I can't play it myself at first. I have to watch someone else play it because I am just chicken shit. I'm chicken shit. Oh, I'm like, I am, I have this weird, I'm kind of like, I'm really fascinated by horror and zombies. I'm terrified of them, and I will not go see a zombie movie in theaters. I will not go see a horror movie in theaters. I'll watch it in my house with all the lights on looking between my fingers because I want to watch it, but I'm too afraid to. That's kind of what Last of Us kind of is. So I played the first one. I watched my brother play the first one because, again, I was too afraid to play it myself. And I loved it. It was amazing. And I think it ended up winning a bunch of awards for best actors. Because, like, it was Troy Baker who plays Joel and Ashley Johnson who plays Ellie. And I think they both ended up winning awards for it. Because, like, if you've seen Troy Baker, he is... you know, maybe just 40, just a 40 year old dude who's like, you know, he's young and he's, you know, so he's not from the South, but he like this physicality that he took on for Joel was incredible. And then number two, like Ashley is reprising her role as Ellie, who's now older, and it is incredible. Like it's so far, it's really scary. There's more they've done. I've been watching Jacksepticeye play it, and he's very, very knowledgeable about games and game design and level design. So listening to him play it, he's very excitable, but he's also very engaged in the game, and I've learned a lot. You know, he likes to find all the Easter eggs. So he's found a lot of different Easter eggs. That there's actually in one level you find an old PS3 console like in the game with some of like the other PlayStation titles, like in, you know, in like broken like old boxes and stuff, which is pretty cool. And they're talking about this old guy named Eugene, and you go into like, you know, this old, you know, place you used to hang out, and you find as Ellie, you find some like old porn tapes, just like, you know, with like labels on them, and one of them is a play on the words Crash Bandicoot, which is another PlayStation title, but like they basically made like a porn parody of their own title, their own property, which is really funny. But like there's a lot of like beautiful little intricacies involved in it, and the facial rendering is really great, and but the level design has been wonderful, because Jack has been really, he played the first one, and typically the level design you would get with the first one, you'd get like there's various different types of zombies, and you'd get runners, which are the worst zombies of all time, in my opinion. They literally just shriek and they run at you, and it's the absolute worst. And then you get the clickers who are blind and they're really fungal. They have like more of like a fungal head and they use echolocation to try and find you. So you have to move very quietly and very slowly so they don't find you. Mm. But they used to be kind of separated. So you'd have a section of a level with just runners and then a section of a level with just clickers. And then maybe they'd throw in like, you know, a stage four zombie, which is like a bloater or something. They're huge and they blow up on you or something. Maybe that's Left 4 Dead. There's too many zombie games.
Yeah.
But then in this one, what they've done is you have different tactics for multiple kinds of zombies, and they've put multiple kinds in the same levels together. So you have to change your tactic on a dime, which makes it much more engaging and much more challenging. And there's a lot of body horror in it, like a lot of like hands reaching for you through like, you know, walls and stuff. And it looks really great. Like the detail in like when you first start the game, you're in winter and you can like the snow, like the tracks in the snow will stay there.
Oh, so
you can
see cool.
Exactly where you've gone. The snow is like glittering. You can see like the subtle bit of snow falling. You can pet a dog. So best game, if you can. There's like a thing. There's a Twitter page called Can you pet the dog? And if you can't pet the dog, it is a bad game. If you can pet the dog, it's a good game.
Well, you guys need to play Satisfactory, and I will say no more.
Okay, pet the dog. You guys gotta pet the dog.
Yeah, there's it's funny. Like I feel like there's a lot of memes like that show up in Satisfactory that I don't know about because I don't play enough video games. To know the, right. The main like video game zombie memes, dog memes, like all that kind of stuff. I feel like they're in Satisfactory. I just don't pick up on them as much. I see people right. online on YouTube videos getting very excited, and I don't necessarily know why. It's like, okay, this is obviously a thing that I don't know about because I'm not steeped right. in that culture. But I've heard a lot of really good things about Last of Us, but because I didn't have a console, I don't think they could play it because it's a Sony exclusive, is it not?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I didn't have access to it. Well, it must be on PC though, surely.
I don't know actually. I've never actually looked. I don't know. Hmm. But at the very least, if there's one person, like a couple of people, I would suggest watching, who've been playing it. Jacksepticeye is you know he's Irish and he's great fun and he's you know he's the right level of enthusiastic but also knows when to like be quiet and just let a scene play out without talking over it.
Nice.
So he's got a really great balance of like how he plays games. I recently watched his Portal playthrough and it's been you can see the amount of passion that he has for video games because it, like he spent literally 10 minutes talking about how much he loved the lighting of Portal. Mm. Like literally he's like, just look at this lighting, look at like, you know, the light spill and like, you know, he's just went nuts for it. And it's like, but it's done with such an earnestness and a genuine like passion for the craft of video games
cool.
that it's just nice to watch. So very yeah. Cool. So his playthrough of Last of Us 2 right now is I'm only two videos in and they're long. They're like 2 hours long, but so far his has been my favorite. It's been very nice.
Nice. And it is a PlayStation 3, 4 exclusive. For The Last yes. of Us, there's no PC. I get yeah. a little bit backwards on some titles because I've never been in any one particular camp outside of the fact that I have an Xbox 360. Now that I have a PC and so much of what I've been looking at for games when I do any kind of pickup or research, they tend to be on PC and Xbox because, of course, Microsoft, why wouldn't they? Yeah. So I'm not as familiar with the console exclusives because I'm not a big console gamer. I've always been more of a PC gamer when it comes down to that kind of stuff. Well, that brings us into the Internet Minute, which is brought to you by you. The Citadel Cafe is 100% listener supported. If you're getting value out of the show, please consider putting a little bit of value back in. Become a member at patreon.com/thecitadelcafe. Joining at any level will give you an invite to the member-only Discord server. There are multiple levels with different rewards like Discord roles and bonus episodes, but over the course of the COVID-19 pandemic, I have opened up the bonus episodes to anyone who is a member of the Discord. We are currently at 21 patrons. That's one ahead of May. So we've got our one new patron for June. I'm not going to argue with you if you'd like to join before July, but I want to say thanks to everybody that's been supporting because, of course, it makes it possible to do the podcast in general, and I really appreciate it. And again, that website is patreon.com/thecitadelcafe. If you would like to join the Discord and talk about nerdy stuff like this, all week long. My pick this week is an article from thecoast.ca. A lot of civil rights movements happening across the globe right now, and the article is entitled Where You Can Give Money to Support Black Organizations and Lives Right Now. It is focused on Nova Scotia, mostly Maritimes, as well as Canada. So I know the Citadel Cafe is an international podcast, but this felt close to home and good to share. A couple of the things that you'll find in the article are things like the Black Lives Matter Solidarity Fund of Nova Scotia. It's an emergency fund for Black people living throughout Nova Scotia to offset the unprecedented effect COVID-19 is having on the Black community here in Nova Scotia, as well as another organization like Canadian Civil Liberties Association. It is a human rights organization that defends the rights, dignity, safety, and freedoms of all people in Canada, working with pro bono lawyers for all levels of court across Canada to fight injustice in a broad-reaching educating program. So there are more resources to explore in this article. I thought it would be best to share the entire article and then just let anybody interested that happens to be local to either Nova Scotia or Canada to do the research on your own, figure out what might be best for your community, and then proceed accordingly should you desire to. So thanks for listening to the Citadel Cafe, and thank you for taking the time to check out the article, because I think this is important stuff. You can find more about the show at thecitadelcafe.com. Music for the show was composed by Kevin MacLeod. And of course, you can email us with all of your thoughts about music and video games at thecitadelcafe@gmail.com or find the show by name on Twitter. Subscribe for free on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Spotify, and YouTube. Word of mouth is the easiest way to support the show. Just tell friends that they should listen to The Citadel Cafe and where they can find it. And if you're out there on the internet and you want to leave us a star review on the Apple Podcasts app, that would be a big help. That is where most of the podcast players go to ping and look for new podcasts. So the better a podcast is rated, the more likely it is to find new listeners. My name is Joel Duggan. You can find everything I am doing online at joelduggan.com. You can listen to my Minecraft podcast at thespawnchunks.com. And you can find me at twitch.tv/joelduggan, where this week I'm going to be returning to Satisfactory. But first, a little Minecraft The Nether update interlude starting later on today. Megan, where can people find you online?
People can find me online on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube at @omegantownsend, and of course on Twitch at twitch.tv/omegantownsend.
You've been listening to The Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick two.